This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Bored of too many ads and dull, meaningless chat? We've got neither. Joy Drive, smart, fun radio.
Law Talk on Joy Drive.
Sally Nichols is the managing partner at Nichols Family Lawyers. Sally, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Isn't it nice to be able to communicate with a few tech problems?
We've had lots of fun, haven't we? Lots of fun. But we've got you now here. There's a series on Netflix. It's called Griselda, and it stars Sofia Vergara. And now Vergara, as well as known for her talent, has also made headlines due to a very public and, might I add, unfortunate court battle with her former husband, Nick Laub. The couple, who had undergone IVF in 2013, froze the embryos with hopes of one day having a child via a surrogacy. However, following their separation in 2014, the husband filed a lawsuit for custody of the embryos. After 6 years of court battles, Vergara was granted a permanent injunction preventing her former partner from using the frozen embryos without her permission. And it got me thinking about the situation in Victoria, a situation where a couple is undergoing IVF, has created and frozen embryos, but then separates. What happens, Al?
I know. I thought this about the same thing when I saw the headlines. I mean, it's a really important topic, Warren, but I really want to start to acknowledging that it can also be extremely fraught, so intensely emotional and traumatic for many people, especially people who are desperate to have a family and were not able to do so. So I just wanted to acknowledge that before answering your question. And in looking at that question, when a couple decide to have a child via IVF, a critical stage in the process is the creation of embryos, and they're created through, we all know, the fertilisation of an egg with sperm, and that's either sourced from individuals within the relationship or from a donor. And this process is carried out usually, but not always, by a fertility clinic chosen by the couple. And once the embryos are created, couples can choose to use them immediately or have them frozen and stored for future use. And so this marks an exciting moment for the journey towards starting a family, but it can also raise legal issues and concerns. And as you said, what happens to the frozen embryos if a couple separates? So there's a couple of options available to couples. So I don't know where we start with that, but I think the IVF clinics often invest a great deal of resources into actually working through with the couples what's going to happen. And good IVF and good practices is to actually go through and have the couple decide before any separation about what actually is going to actually happen. And there are three options available to a couple. And it can be that the couple choose to have the embryos destroyed. The rights to the embryos can be transferred to one of the former couple, with the other person relinquishing their rights to the embryos, or the couple can decide what happens to the embryos at the time the relationship ends.
So how does the decision-making process unfold? Like, how does it work in real life?
Well, Warren, it depends on whether the couple has an agreement in place, possibly as part of the contract signed with the IVF clinic. And as I alluded to before, good practices that actually does happen. Because in cases where the couple do discuss the options before embarking on their journey and they did put their thoughts in writing as part of a contract, then what was agreed upon should dictate the course of action in the event of a relationship ending. So it's actually, if there's a dispute, it actually is a contractual dispute. And this could mean either the embryos will be destroyed or the rights to the embryos will be transferred to one of the former partners by way of a contract at the time they're actually entering into the IVF. However, I mean, looking at that third option where the couple just chooses to decide what happens at the time of separation, it's probably not the most joyful thing to decide when you're embarking on this process. And maybe a few people want to put it under the, put their head in the sand about it. But hopefully it is discussed with their IVF clinician and they actually enter into that agreement.
What happens if the couple signed an agreement and then one person does change their mind, though?
Great question, Warren, because the reality is that people do change their minds, and how one person believes they will feel in the event of separation might not align with their actual feelings, even when the time arises. And this is particularly the case where a significant amount of time has elapsed since the couple first signed the agreement. The more time that passes, the more each member of the former couple may feel that the embryos they created are their last chance to have a family of their own, or they might really be quite rigid in deciding that they don't want to be a parent now and they believe the embryo should be destroyed. So they're very understandable shifts in emotions, and they can result in disputes between former couples, rendering a previously agreed upon arrangement no longer feasible. And in such cases, one person may choose to commence legal proceedings, ultimately seeking court intervention if they can't come to an agreement between themselves.
I mean, just thinking about it though, like, why would you sign a contract if it can just be challenged? What's the point?
Well, it's not so easy to challenge the agreement, and it's so fascinating because embryos aren't actually property for a whole host of reasons under our Family Law Act, but under the IVF Act, when courts have actually handled these disputes, they're inclined to actually honour the contract. So, yes, if people want to challenge the contract, like any contractual dispute, they can go to court about a contract. But it seems to be that the couple of cases that are actually on topic, that the courts have actually been inclined to honour the terms of the contract.
So do IVF clinics in Victoria, do they have to include a clause in the contract that says what happens to embryos if a couple separates? No.
No, they don't. They're not required by law to include that clause. But however, the majority do it as, a good process, practice. And if a couple receives a contract from the IVF clinic that does not address the treatment of embryos in the event of separation, they really should consider having their own written agreement drawn up by a lawyer. And this agreement should clearly state what should be done with the embryos if the couple were to separate. Look, such an approach is not for everyone, and some couples might feel that this is unnecessary or too difficult to discuss at an already challenging and stressful time, and I totally understand that. But just to, again, avoid the drama and the angst later on, at least consider having the discussion before, because if you do separate and then face for the first time making what can be a devastating decision, it just can make it even harder.
We're chatting with Sally Nichols, Managing Partner at Nichols Family Lawyers, about what happens when a couple is going through IVF, they've created embryos, and then they separate. So what happens if there's been no written contract, the couple separate and can't reach an agreement? I mean, that sounds like the nightmare scenario.
It is, and we often talk about this, Warren, don't we, in relation to family law, mediation. Try and resolve the dispute using expert mediators. I'm sure that the clinics actually have people who are very, who can cover the issue and are used to dealing with any conflicts over embryos post-separation. And in a mediation, the mediator will try and help the former couple by facilitating discussions and supporting them to make a mutually acceptable decision. Given the emotional intensity of this period, the former couple might find a more informal approach far more appealing than going to court for a decision to be made. And mediation is also more cost-effective than going to court. However, if mediation fails or if one of the partners is not willing to attend mediation, then the matter can progress to court for the court to decide what should happen to the embryos if they don't want to honour a contract, or there's actually no guiding contract.
What happens, just out of curiosity, Sal, how long can an IVF clinic hold a frozen embryo for?
Well, interesting. All the states have different rules, but in Victoria, frozen embryos can be stored by IVF clinics for a maximum of 5 years, although this period can be extended for a further 10 years with the fertility clinic's consent, or there is a recent case in Victoria where in VCAT there was a party who was able to actually extend the period just to have more time to try and come to their own arrangement. So it really does vary on which state or territory that you're actually in.
Sal, you know, one of the things that I've learned from chatting to you, and of course, you know, not having kids myself, is I didn't know a lot about family law, and we've been chatting to you for a while now on Joy Drive, and there is so much to think about, isn't there? I mean, even we're talking about people going on an IVF journey. I mean, there's a lot to consider before you actually do that. What role do you play in all of this as a family lawyer?
Well, we sometimes see people in relation to donor agreements or helping with different parenting agreements that can be actually entered into when people are planning to maybe co-parent, because as we know, people from have all different types of families, and it's very sensible, particularly if there is a donor involved, to actually have an agreement in terms of what's actually going to happen with the parenting of that child. And so we can actually help look at the rights and responsibilities of the couple involved, look at the legal implications of using donor eggs or embryos. We can advise about the legal framework surrounding IVF in your jurisdiction, and also help her negotiate drafting these donor agreements. And particularly if there's potentially a co-parenting agreement involved, or there's going to be some form of relationship between the donor and the child, then that we can also include what happens to any unwanted embryos in the event of separation. All pretty rugged stuff, and I really, really in these sorts of situations would want to use a social scientist to help us involve, negotiate this type of plan together.
Sel, it's great to chat with you again. We'll talk to you again next month.
Absolutely, Warren. It's something that I think we might actually, it was so interesting researching this again. I think we might do a podcast on it. I think it's a really fraught area.
Fascinating.
And there's the law's not exactly on point in Victoria, and we probably need a few things cleared up.
Fantastic. Sel, great to chat with you. Talk to you again next time.
You do. Bye.
Sally Nichols, the managing partner of Nichols Family Lawyers.
Joy Drive on Joy 94.9 FM in Melbourne, Joy on your digital radio, iHeartRadio, TuneIn.com or the Joy app, no matter where you are.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.